You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm warm. I don't think many of the people in the country are saying that right now, so I'm lucky.
Yes, it was in the teens this morning on my run, so yes, it is not warm up here in New York City, that's for sure.
I talked to someone in Toronto today, and they were minus 15.
He
said I was, the guy told me I was sweating because of all the clothes he was wearing.
Well, that's the other thing about when you pile up and wear so many clothes in the cold, right? You start to sweat and then you get colder because you're wet and now you're freezing. It's just, you know, listen. But, you know, runners, we know you wear moisture wicking, warm fabric and, you know, you manage and you're okay. David, ask Coach Thorpe's one of the favorite things we do here. Our listeners and fans get to tap into Coach Thorpe's big basketball brain. So for all of you, those of you out there who want to participate going forward, please send your questions in to truehoop@truehoop.com. That is truehoop@truehoop.com. All right. This question comes from Mikhail, and it ties into what you and I were talking about with about Derek White right before I believe I left for vacation. And we talked about how he's just so valuable and his EPM numbers are off the charts. And this is Mikhail, and he's asking, you know, you talked about Derek White, and he should be an all-star because of his great advanced stat, for example. He's top 10 in EPM. But Mikhail thinks that the six guards ahead of him in the fan vote are more deserving. Tyrese Halliburton, Trae Young, Dame, Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Maxey, and Jalen Brunson. Intuitively, it seems like advanced stats may overvalue certain role players, and I wanted to ask you if you think that's a conceptual bias in the way advanced stats values players.
Well, I'm not the best person to ask because I, you know, we should talk to Taylor or Ben or someone, Seth.
And Stephen Ilardi.
Steve, John Hollinger, you know, the guys that are smarter than me about it. But I talk to those guys all the time or email and text them. So first of all, I don't agree that Trae Young has had a better season this year than Derek White.
I agree.
His team is very up and down, and he's a big part of that, in my opinion, good and bad. He is incredible and also sometimes horrific. Like a NASCAR plane crash, car crash. He is sometimes. He is amazing, though. But I think Derek's had a better season. Anyway, I think that the algorithms do their best. My understanding is they do their best to account for everyone on the court. Mm-hmm. So it is true that when you're playing with better players around you, there's a real benefit to it. There's a negative to it. Your usage won't be as high, and that values in. That does matter to some degree. But they do their best to account for both who you're playing with, but also where you're on the rotation, who you're playing against, right? Role players, backups, starters, stars. The other thing is I do agree with this with a very simple idea, and I'm looking forward to talking whenever we do a stats talk with these other guys. Ultimately, a possession ends with a make or a miss. Okay, I don't know how qualified those makes and misses are when this data is created. So in other words, if it's a miss, but it was a great shot, does that score the same as a miss and it was a terrible shot if you're a defender? Meaning we really did our job. He missed the shot because we did our job and we took man, take a tough shot. Is it the same ultimate result as you played no defense? They just missed the shot. I don't know about that. I'm curious about it. And also, the missed shot itself. when you've got a Rudy Gobert, a Chet Holmgren, guys that are protecting the rim at a high level, Brooke Lopez for years. I'm not sure Milwaukee's done as well this year with it. It's going to raise everyone's boat because they're just not making as many shots. Or you've got the big wing defenders or whatever that can guard the perimeter better. And so there's no doubt Derek White wouldn't be performing like this, in my opinion, on a lesser team. That being said, there's just a handful of guys that can play as well as Derek's playing for Boston and have them be as successful as they are. And so this is where I think humans can use the data, not just our eyes, but we can think deeper. We can think deeply and be able to make the assessment that while Derek White may not be able to put up the same numbers Trae Young can put up in Atlanta, we could argue the Celtics could be worse with Trae than they would be with Derek. But we also might be able to argue that Derek would be better for Atlanta than Trae because he's just a better player.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah. Right.
Then that accounts then the system. What are you running with Derek White as your one instead of Trae? It's not just science. There is art to this as well. And that's where I think the art comes in.
No, I love this. And this is where, you know, you come in, right? Because you are someone who watches games and you are not you're not afraid of advanced analytics or someone who's prisoner to only your eyes. You watch with your eyes and then you check to see, do they back up what my eyes are and what my knowledge of the game is showing me? If not, then I have questions to ask. What's the disconnect here? What is missing? And I think that's the important part of it, right? So we use these two things together. And
well, I want to talk about that
because
you're exactly right, Gerard. I just had this situation happen the other day. I watched a whole game, and a starter for a team only took a few shots. I think went 2 of 5 from the field, maybe 3 of 5 from the line. I don't remember exactly, but nothing extravagant offensively. Blocked a couple of shots, got maybe 6 rebounds, 3 or 4 assists. Was +5 in 22 minutes as a starter in a game that his team lost by 11, 12, 14 points, whatever. But when he was on the court for 20 plus minutes, they won. I was very happy with how the player played, other than his offense was just okay, but made a lot of very good passes, good decisions, good screens. And again, they won his minutes. Mm-hmm. And would have won by more if guys had made wide open shots. They just didn't make them, but that always happens. A backup in that same game played one more minute, scored, I think, 2 more baskets, was minus 15 in the game. And I did not think played a good all-around game. Had less rebounds, less everything except for scoring. And then when I looked at one of the data things we look at, I use 5 or 6 different data sites on one of the sites, that bench player who played against bench players and got murdered scored much better than the starter. And I was surprised. I emailed the guy who runs the website. And one of the things he told me is you get dinged for being the nearest guy to a score when they score. I have a problem with that.
Right.
Because what I see, and I've suspected this before, and I can't wait till we do a show on it, I've watched guys like LeBron, I feel like intentionally not close out a guy that he's not going to get to because if you're not within 3 feet, it's like you didn't exist. Now, it still goes against your record.
Right.
Because you're on the defensive side of the ball.
Correct.
But you're not dinged especially because you're getting scored on. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is an issue.
Yeah. This is awesome.
We're working through this. We're still working through this.
And I think oftentimes people get this in their head that I thought advanced stats are supposed to be perfect. And they're not. There's no system is perfect at determining whom is, quote unquote, better than somebody else, right? These are all tools in our toolbox that we are using.
Right.
And you come to make an informed decision about what you're seeing and what's happening.
And Gerard, the guys that are doing this, just like a good coach is always trying to tweak his offense and his defense, whatever. I've been impressed with these data guys. They're always looking to make better algorithms. They're hungry to tell the best stories possible, which means accurate stories. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm all in with these guys. I just don't understand is what they do. They don't understand what I do either. But their stuff is super important. I value it tremendously, and every year I think it'll get better and better.
And we talked about this. This is another part of Mikhail's question. Mikhail says White is great at doing the small things, but you have to consider that his role isn't as big as someone of the other stars on the other team. So his value should be theoretically less. if we look at just EPM, then White would be the best player on the Celtics. And I think that's where Mikal kind of misses the point, right? It's not so much that because his role isn't what Jason Tatum's is in the Celtics means he's less valuable than Trae Young in Atlanta, right? It's what is being asked of him to perform in the role and in the squad that he's on. When you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, we don't need you to do all this offensive creation. Those guys got that. However, you have to be the best on-ball defender. You have to initiate offense, get us into things quickly. You have to rebound well, all those different things that, again, have value. And I think that's what we're trying to determine with these advanced stats, right? Henry says this all the time. Scoring is the easiest thing for our eyes to understand, right? Ball goes in, done. It's very easy. And those are the people who excite the neural parts, those parts of our brains, right? Ooh, Trae Young is so exciting. No doubt, elite offensive player. The things that are not, although with Trae, it's pretty easy to see. The things that aren't so easy to see are, well, how are you on defense? How are you at navigating over screens? How are you, right? How are you doing all the other things? Trae ain't very good at that, right? We have lots of eye tests and number tests to see those things. And that, as we always say, defense is half of the game, right? Yeah. When you don't have the ball on offense, what are you doing? Guarding.
Yeah, there was a plays maybe a few games ago where a backup player for a team who was starting in the game because of an injury was able to not just take away the roller. He was on the left side of the floor. The right side if you were on offense facing the basket. So defense is left side. Like a corner shooter type guy, quarter shooter, quarter wing. Actions going on the other side, pick and roll. He was able to slide all the way over, disrupt the roller coming. So the read was, okay, the taggers, man, is going to be open. And so the dribbler threw it to what he thought was the open guy. That defender was able to cut off the pick and roll roller and then get in the pass lane and actually steal the ball. You just don't see that very much. A good defender will close out the shooter and maybe even take the shot away, or at least do an early high-end contest and lessen his chances of making it, you know, out of 10 times. He'll make three instead of four. This guy actually stole it, and he did it twice. It was really quite extraordinary. That is valuable stuff that we can start accounting for better than ever with these metrics. But I'll take issue with something else, and nothing against the Mikal, is that his name?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nothing against him at all. No one thinks Derek White's having a better year than Jason Tatum, nor is anyone thinking he's more valuable a player. It is one of our tools. What's more important is you look at Derek White's salary and where he might, you're trying to figure out where he's going to go, and we compare him to other people in how we pool all the data together and how does he compare to those guys. And I would say he ranks above almost everyone, correct, as Drew Holiday has.
Correct.
And he's never been a great scorer either. So we are allowed to, there are machines out there, there are algorithms out there spewing out something different that would say Tatum is the better player. Mm-hmm. I don't think Taylor Snarr from Dustin Threes would have anyone think you should pay Derek White more money than Jason
Correct.
Tatum. I don't think that's the case.
Correct.
And so this is where the art part comes in, is knowing which science to look at and how to put it all together.
And there's a way, David, that players like Derek White, Drew Holiday, Draymond Green, et cetera, how they are beneficial and so critical in teams winning championships, right? No Draymond Green. Guess what? Warriors are not doing as great as Steph and Clay and all those guys were. No Draymond. Guess what's not happening? Championships, right? And Kyle Lowry, plus minus God for a zillion years. There's a way that when you pair those players with elite other players, oh, well, now you're cooking with greases, I like to say, right? It's trouble.
So the cooking metaphor is good. For New Year's Eve, my wife and I went to, we think the nicest restaurant in the area, which is not a place we go to frequently. It's probably been a decade or more since we've gone. And it was a 7-course meal, amazing. And the amuse-bouche was supposed to be charcuterie. Well, mm-hmm. It was not charcuterie, it was charcuterie. It was just one each. It wasn't like an assortment of meats and cheeses, and it was just one was thing, and I couldn't even tell you all the different layers on this one morsel of food that each of us got. It was two total, but it was the greatest thing I've ever had in my life, until the next course was also amazing. We had seven of them, but it was just extraordinary, and separately, take any ingredient out, it would have been fine, it would have been good, and then really good, but with all of them together. Well, that's what team building is. mm-hmm. is you've got this, you know, Tatum is the stock, right? Tatum mm-hmm. is the main thing. Mm-hmm. And Brown is right there, but they are not enough. They're not enough. We have to have these other things in. And that's where I think the best executives shine brightest mm-hmm. is they understand it's not just the talents of the player. It's the culture of the team, but also what is that culture going to bring out? Right. The colors are brighter when the culture is right. Mm-hmm. If you think about, think about anything when you're the great paintings, when they're redone, remastering audio, it's a little bit you do just makes it sound better. It's the same stuff.
Yep.
You have to add those little things in to get the better recipe. And I think Brad's done a great job in Boston. Yeah. We'll see. We'll talk about them later.
We sure will.
Dead last in points off the bench scoring. We'll see if because of that depth, the Tatum, Brown, whatever, mm-hmm. are playing some time with the backup. So when the starters score, it counts as starter points. But it might be in second unit actions, right? Mm-hmm. We'll see how that works out. But that's their job. And I think Boston's done a great job with it.
And you brought up a great point, and we'll finish it here, is that, again, it's about the value White is providing at the dollars he's being paid, right? He is performing at a level on par, as we said, as an all-NBA first-team player, right? That is the level he is producing according to many advanced metrics. But he's not being paid what a first-team all-NBA person makes, which is usually $40, $55 million. He's making $17. So that, because you can get that level of production out of a player making that salary, that's what helps you make you so much better because you have money to spend in other places, right? That's what David talked about with team building. It's huge in a salary cap sport.
And I needed to look at, you can go to Cleaning the Glass or basketballreference.com, NBA.com, and look at the on-off numbers mm-hmm. when he's on or off the court. Because even though he's probably not going to make all NBA, mm-hmm. he certainly is going to be in the running for it. And the on-off, I think, will tell us a big story. I just suspect, having watched Boston play a lot, mm-hmm. I'll be watching him again tonight, they're just not as good when he's not on the court. He's really a terrific – I think Mikhail's just using him as a placeholder. He doesn't get there quite.
Yep.
But he picked the wrong guy to pick probably because he's really spectacular. He is someone that rim protects mm-hmm. at a guard. I mean, a couple years ago, he was like number one, maybe even last year, like super close – in terms of if he's the guy closing you out, you're just scoring a lot less. And he's got amazing hands, amazing timing, shoots it great. He also, he can play bully ball. I've seen him bully guards. You don't mm-hmm. expect it. But I saw a game one time where it was, I'll tell you what, it was a Pacers. Andrew Nembhard kind of bullied him and scored. And I thought, man, how is that second year player doing that with Derek? Derek came right down, boop, 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 score in the paint. Like, oh, no, young fella. I tell you that. Like, he's got some edge about him. Yeah, he's terrific.
He helps player. You win possessions. And you've heard David say this all. I mean, possessions are what matters in this game. Like, that's the whole game, right? And he is excellent at helping you win possessions on both ends of the court.
For sure.
All right, David. It is, of course, trade season. And one of the favorite things you like to say to us in our chat group is, everything you're hearing is not true. Right, that gets put out there by everyone's favorite people they follow on Twitter for all the trade bombs. And it's true because if you actually look at when moves happen, they almost always are never talked about prior to. The RJ Barrett, OG Anunoby trade, I mean, I could be wrong. I don't remember anybody saying anything about that trade prior to.
No.
And this is David's point. He's like, and your agents are going to keep things quiet. The only time it comes out in public is if someone is trying to show another team that, ooh, maybe they'll force them to make a move because we have more leverage or whatever the situation may be. But the actual specifics, people keep those things very, very quiet. But David has a feeling that this trade season, we're going to see some things.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. So you and I are about to get into mm-hmm. A little list of the contenders, more or mm-hmm. less, and what they have to do a better job of, whatever. Well, here's number one is, what are they going to look like? You know, no matter what I say today, they may look differently as early as tomorrow. In some cases, if a few years ago a team tried to trade for a player and failed, and word got out, they were going, maybe it was true, maybe it wasn't, but media people remember it. And so when that player looks like he might be available again, Well, then everyone's going back to the teams that initially they thought were going after him. But the principals tend to keep it very, very quiet. There are exceptions. Sometimes executives can be sloppy with who they're talking to, and maybe even like, we want a bidding war. So let's let the word out a little bit. So you call a bunch of teams and you don't say, hey, make sure this never leaves, mm-hmm. because then the other team knows they're calling other people too.
Right.
These teams all talk to each other all the time. In many cases, they work together. And now one guy gets promoted or demoted or stays the same, another guy left, and they're still talking. They're still friends. Wives are still sending Christmas cards to each other and that kind of thing. But the other thing to consider too is ownership ultimately rules the day. And so you might have principals coming to a decision. Now we got to take it to our owner. In fact, that's literally how it goes down. We have to go to our owner and get permission on this. And the owner may feel differently, rightfully or wrongfully. Most of these owners shouldn't really have an opinion because they're what they're talking about, but some do. But yeah, there's a lot to it, and there's a lot of moving parts. And you may want to trade player X for player Y, but the team for player Y may say, we don't want X, we want Z, or we want A or B. And they go back and forth and they haggle. And you got to get money agreed to. If a player is about to be out of a contract, you know, what is that going to next contract going to look like? Now you got to get some trust issues because you can't extend them.
Yep.
There's a lot of moving parts. And so I know a trade might go down today. It also might not go down today. We don't know. We have no idea. The owner gets to decide that.
Yep.
If both owners say, yep, let's do the deal, they might get a deal done. But who's going to tell billionaires? Who's going to start predicting what they're going to do except fight taxes and abortion or whatever? Whatever it is that owners fight for.
And who is going to tell a billionaire, yeah, no, we're not doing that. Right? Like, these guys don't hear the word no ever in their life. They're the boss of everything. So if he or she says, we're not doing it, guess what's going to happen? It's not happening because they decide it's not.
No.
And I love the point that you make. I think oftentimes with the way trades are presented, David, and this is whatever, it's not about Woj or Shams, but like through Woj and Shams, it's this idea of, oh, it's just simple. You just call this guy and you get this and you... It's not how it works, guys. Like, this stuff takes lots of haggling back and forth, right? They don't call on a Monday and then Monday night, all right, we're done. Like, and the trade's happening. As David said, I don't want this player. I want that player. Okay, but I don't want to give him up. Well, how about this draft pick? Well, I don't want to give you that draft pick. It's a lot of
and then also, you can, if I don't follow, I'm almost never on Twitter and I don't follow any of those writers. I don't need to get my news broken that way. Right. I'll find out fast enough anyway.
Right. Right.
The analysis is what matters to me, and those guys don't do analysis. But I know of an instance in the last month where one of the big news breakers broke some article about a team was trying to negotiate with another team. Well, meanwhile, I know for a fact that writer was told indirectly through another co-writer of his, there's no truth to what you're talking about. It's not at all the case. And they went with it anyway. And then at some point that day or the next day, they kind of qualified their statement and said, oh, no, negotiations aren't happening anymore. Like, they're just trying to stay relevant in the world and throw something out there. It's almost never accurate. That's why I don't follow any of it. It's just made up hooey, typically. Yeah. It's based on, you know, there's a lot of Hollywood movies based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
But the true story is maybe 1% close to what really the movie was. Let's see, a lot of those things here is they're throwing stuff out because there was once a talk 3 years ago, 3 months ago, 3 days ago. They don't really know much more than that because they're not being told anything. Yeah. And then they're just called after the trade's done.
Right.
If they want the national guy to break it as opposed to the local guy, which is what happens all the time.
Yeah. Look at that, folks. A little inside basketball for you there on how this stuff really breaks down and how it works. But look, it's interesting. And this is going to lead us into our next thing. But before we get into that, let's take a quick commercial break. So David has been on record saying he thinks it will be an active trade season. And I think a large part of that is because there are a bunch of teams sort of clustered around the same level. And maybe some teams, you know, listen, one of the things about this, David, is GMs can convince themselves and owners, you know, we're right here. We got a good record. If we get this one kind of player or these two types of things, we could be right up there with Team X. And, you know, I think if you look at all the metrics we look at, Boston looks elite. Of course, we talk about them. Minnesota and OKC have excellent metrics, but you know they have to show us stuff in the playoffs. And we have questions about Minnesota offensively for sure, and the youth of Oklahoma City. And Denver is the defending champions, right? They're starting five still when they play. Pretty fucking good at basketball and just won the championship. But really, when there's Philly and his other teams, you're just like, there's no gauntlet where you're like, all right, this team head and shoulders, invincible. You cannot beat them 4 out of 7. And that may cause more people to be like, well, you know, maybe we should go after this thing. We're pretty good right now. Let's make a move. So I said to David, all right, let's look at the 6 rough or so contenders. And these are the teams I put out there and a couple of wild cards. And one of the great things we have about working with David is that he watches basketball and analyzes teams in a way nobody else does, right? Most people just watch it and say who wins, whatever. David's looking for development. How'd you look now versus running that same action 15 games ago? All sort of little intricacies like that, which are great. So I wanted to go through some of these contenders with David and ask him, what is he looking for in these teams as we approach the second half of the season? And yes, folks, we're at the halfway point. Not All-Star game. All-Star game's like 2/3. We are halfway through the NBA season right now. And usually, unless something major happens, record-wise, this is kind of where teams hover and stay within a game or two of where they are in the standings. So I want to start with the first team on my list, David. We just talked about them, the Boston Celtics. I mean, they are, when that 5-man unit plays, good God, they are really good. But they're not perfect. I saw the Minnesota Timberwolves, who were on a second night of a back-to-back, came in late that night, 1, 2, or 3 in the morning. They had a lead, 7 points up with 2 minutes to go. So they're not perfect. What are you watching for the Boston Celtics in the second half of the season?
There's a couple of things. One would be they're just relying on their starters to do lion's share of the scoring we talked about. So you can stagger them after you start them to make sure you always have some guys in the game that can help the second unit score. That's going to come at a cost overall in minutes in the postseason, but it absolutely can work. To me, the biggest thing is fighting complacency. They just are a really terrific team. Those, you know, the probably the two best fivesomes are Denver's and Boston's, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd agree.
If it's just a 5-on-5 league, it'll be those two, I think. And they defend. Boston defends. There's a real pride in what they do. Can they keep an edge? Because I'm someone who believes there have been exceptions, but they are just exceptions. The teams that sleepwalk through the last third of the season or so, and then think they can turn it on. I used to call it the Pistons syndrome, because that Detroit team was just going to win the Eastern Conference pretty much every year.
Right.
And I just thought they manufactured it pretty well. I don't think it's a good strategy. And look at Miami, 2 years in a row, 2 years, the last three have not been great. And then in the postseason really done well. Well, that's also the fault of these teams that are better than them that just could not continue to maintain it and then didn't have in the postseason. So to me, if Boston is reaching, I don't know what the record is now, but if they can get to 60 wins, that would mean, you know, or even more. I didn't predict them to do that before the season. It says a lot about them if they continue to find a way to crush people on the way.
So they're 2.5 games off on Milwaukee right now, 30-9. So would you, if you were part of the Boston Celtics brain trust, how would you look to talk to your guys about keeping that edge in the second half of the season? Would you use it like a laboratory, basically saying, barring something major happens here, we're going to be somewhere in first or second place in the Eastern Conference? Is that what you think? And let's work on some things that maybe you want to see in the postseason, or is it still, no, just win every game in front of you and move forward?
No, I doubt they're doing that. I would definitely prioritize making sure we have more production from our bench, empower them, find ways to get them to feel like they're being productive for us. We want them confident. You know, a lot of those guys haven't really done much in the playoffs, like those starting five guys have.
Even at the expense of potentially losing games. You think that's valuable? Yes.
Yeah. I think you're better off losing that way and being competitive than coasting with your better players. And so, and then the other thing is I would really talk to my team. I would do research. As here's the teams that have been 30-9 going into, you know, the final 43 games of the season. And here's how they finished the regular season. Here's what they did in the postseason. My guess is they haven't all won championships, and we're trying to win a championship. So how do we do it? Well, we were 30-9. You know, let's maybe win 32 games in the second half, 33 games. Like I said, win 60 or more, which they're on track to do now. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. Let's have no excuses. If we develop our young guys, we still expect to win games. We're not playing them 40 minutes all the time. Yeah, I just think you be competitive. And I don't get the impression that they're going to be complacent, but human nature is to relax some. You're not chasing a record. There's no record. You're not going to break the Celtics all-time winning record. Mm-hmm. You're not going to catch the Thunder. I'm sorry, right. The Warriors.
Right.
Yeah, you're not going to catch that.
Or the Bulls, you're not doing
anything. Let's be the number one seed. There is value to that. In part because we should be. That's the argument. That our biggest competitors ourselves.
I like it. All right, moving to the Western Conference. The next team I have on the contender list, the Oklahoma City Thunder, currently second in the West, 27-11, only a half game behind the leaders, Minnesota Timberwolves. We've talked about them from a trade aspect a number of times, so we know that can make the makeup of this team potentially look different after the trade deadline. But all things being equal, what are you looking for out of Oklahoma City in the second half of the season?
There were two things I saw that they're also not a great. There's a few teams on your list that don't have a great bench. The Thunder are really interesting because really Shea's the only guy playing. I'm sorry, Shea and Chet. The only guys really making a difference in terms of impact. Even Jalen Williams, I think, has a negative plus minus on off, court data number. They don't have a lot of scoring off the bench. Isaiah Joe's, a good shooter. And they're 26 in opponent second chance points. They're not a good defensive rebounding team. And some people don't care. I care. Any Memphis Grizzlies fan should care too, because they've had real success. Memphis has killing you on the glass. I think it matters. I do. I think I look at every 7-game series. Every game lives on its own island in a sense, and you got to win 4. And so if you think, if we're the better team, we're going to outplay them 2 or 3 times at least in 7, at least. And we're going to win those games. But we're also going to have 2 or 3 clunkers. And so maybe one game's a toss-up. But if you can win a game, a series, because you just crush them on the glass and all the games are pretty much even, that's huge. Mm-hmm. And so to me, you're looking for, Travis, our editor, plays fantasy. And the way he does fantasy basketball is, every stat you get, like you win the assists and the turnovers, points, whatever. It's an interesting way to look at it, but in a playoff series, it's that way. I want to win the 3-point shooting contest as much as possible, but I also know I'm not going to win some of those. Do I automatically have to lose? Not if you kill them on the glass. Not if you kill them in transition. Not if you kill them in a few turnovers. And so Oklahoma City, not being, they're a great shooting team. That's the other thing too, is, if they can clean up their defensive backboards better, there's a little less pressure to be so good on offense, because they just, they're the best free throw shooting team, I believe, and the best shooting team, 3-point shooting. I don't know how long that'll last. And so we got to find ways to win when we're not shooting well.
What's interesting, also interesting about Oklahoma City is their youth. And I love, you said this maybe last week or something, where yes, it is usually true that a young team has to go through pain and fire before they win, but it's not, doesn't have to always be that way, right? I'm looking at where Oklahoma City is, and they're 2. They're, I said, half game behind Minnesota. It's possible. Well, I mean, whether they finish 1 or 2, they're going to play one of those play-in teams. Well, lurking down in that range are the Mavericks with Luka Doncic, the Phoenix Suns with their big 3, and potentially the Lakers. That's a problem, right? If you get one of those 3 teams in round 1 when you were a young basketball team.
And who is the 4 and 5 seeds right now?
The 4 and 5 seeds right now are the Clippers and the Pelicans.
Exactly what I thought. Hello. you want to deal with Zion and Herb Jones and Brandon Ingram? And they've been a good playoff team. They have been, and then of course the Clippers are they might end up surging to 2 or 3.
They might.
But nothing's gonna be easy. I didn't mention the youth part, because nothing you can do about that. You just gotta keep playing, right? The postseason is going to be a different animal. They've been playing games. That's it. So except for Shea, barely. So yeah, they just got to tweak up what they can do. And then the postseason is going to be what it is. Win or lose, they'll learn from it. I would like to see the urgency. I think you will, because they are young. But none of them are going to think, except for maybe Shea, none of them are going to think, they're all going to think we're going to be doing this every year. Shea needs to remind them not so fast. Like, we only hope it is too hard. Yeah. Luka, when he went to the finals in the Western Conference 2 years ago, he never foresaw last season.
Nope.
You know, LeBron and AD never foresaw what's happened since they won the championship. I would bet if you took, you know, if you surveyed the 1,000 smartest basketball people, me being one of them, maybe. Let's assume I am because I made up this game.
And it's 1,000 people, so come on, you're definitely in that.
If you asked all of us, what are the chances the Lakers, don't make it back to the finals? I wouldn't have said it's a great chance. It was a chance. They really look loaded, but it's hard. Things happen, injuries and change of coaches and all of that. Mm-hmm. So to me, the Thunder should not take it for granted that next year is going to be even better. And let's try to do it something really special this year. That's a mindset issue.
I like it. The Philadelphia 76ers, a team you have been high on the last 3 years, played well so far this season. A little rocky of late, 5-5 in their last 10. Missed Embiid for, at least 4 of those games.
And that's a big deal.
So off the bat, Embiid health is if that's a problem, well, then they got problems. So assuming he's healthy, what are you looking for Philadelphia in the second half of the season?
Yeah, this is not the Celtics that can lose a Tatum or Brown and have just an embarrassment of riches on the starting five. They don't have that. There's a couple of stats that I found. One is they're 25th in opponent's second chance points. I'm sure that goes up when Joel plays. But how do you handle Joel's minutes? You know, a couple of years ago, the year they lost to they lost to the Raptors. Mm-hmm. And that's the famous series where they got murdered when the few minutes a game Embiid was out. And it was, I don't remember the numbers anymore because I'm old, but it was crazy. Like how few minutes he missed and how badly he got overwhelmed scoring-wise in those minutes. So that's part of it is you better handle your backboards better when Joel's out of the game. They also are doing a bad job getting back on defense. They're giving up their 26th and opponent fast break points. These last 10 games, that's what I've been looking at last 10. That's a problem. You're going to miss a lot of shots when Joel's not playing. All of this goes to how do they handle the non-Embiid minutes? Because these are all non-Embiid minutes now. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was they're giving up a lot of paint shots, paint scoring. Again, Joel's out. But all this circles into how are they handling Embiid's minutes. So Embiid's non-minutes. Whether he's out of a game, but he's playing, or he's out of a game because he's not playing, how Philly handles that, I think, is going to tell us a lot. Yeah. And they're definitely in the trade market for sure.
For sure. We like their starting five. We love the jump that Maxey made. Harris is a good player. But, you know,
he's playing really well.
They're going to need a couple things, I think, just to, again, solidify those non-Embiid minutes. And if he misses a game, or, you know, which could potentially happen in the postseason.
Yeah.
A team we talked about last week, the Timberwolves, right now first in the West, half a game up. That defense is elite. But you mentioned, as good as Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns are offensively, they're ball stoppers, right? A lot of ISO ball. They need to run more stuff. So I assume that's one of the things you're looking for them in the second half of the season. Are you going to run more things?
Well, yeah, I don't get too much in the X and O because there's so much going on. But they have got a couple issues. I think about playoff success, and we just talked about finding ways to win games. They're not a great offensive team. And so how do you make up for that? Play great defense. Okay, great. That's not going to win you a game. It just keeps you in contention. They're 22nd in offensive rebounding points, second chance points. They're a long group with athletes in a lot of spots. It would help them if they were demons on the offensive glass when they missed that first shot. To be able to get more, if they were like top 10 in second chance points,
like how Memphis has been the last 2 years,
right? Exactly, that would really mean a lot to me because that would mean they've got a good plan when they just can't make shots in a game. They're going to play great defense. You still got to score, but that's one way to do it. 26 in fast break points, also a problem. They're not a team that's going to run it down your throat, and yet I think they're capable of doing that. They've got big rebounders. They've got obviously Anthony Edwards, Mike Conley as distributor. You know, Jaden McDaniel as a finisher in transition on the wing. I'd like that number to get up. They have a turnover problem, 27th in points off turnovers. So they've offensively, if they're conservative and are careful not to turn the ball over, but they're not getting rebounds and they're not racing in transition to score, and they're just relying on a conservative half-court offense, that's problematic for me. Like if I was picking a team right now to get upset in the first round, having no idea with the matches, I'd pick them. That doesn't mean they'd lose, and it doesn't mean I'm picking them to get beaten 4. I mean, they gave the world champions the best run last year, if I remember right.
Them and the Suns. They went 5. Suns went 6. Yes.
Oh, did those the Suns go 6?
Suns okay. go 6, yeah. Suns yeah. went 6.
So I'm wrong. The Suns gave them a better game. But I think it was competitive. And so that's
very competitive.
But yeah, the you know, not scoring a second chance, turning the ball over, turning the buckets, that's an issue. And there's going to be a game probably for them that they turn the ball over too much the postseason. So now work on let's try to play faster without turning the ball over. Let's try to find ways to score easier. Let's hit the glass harder. I know what they're thinking. Stan Van Gundy did this with the Magic when he had Dwight. Screw the offensive rebounds. You're not going to score against us 5-on-5. And so we're just going to play great D, 5-on-5. We're always going to have 5 back. Obviously, anytime it's 5-on-4, it's a disadvantage to the defense. 4-on-3, anytime there's a man number, disadvantage, it's a problem for the defense. So that's why they're not doing the glass as hard as they can. Mm-hmm. But I think they should jiggle that up a little bit. Just change it up a little bit and try to get to the glass a little bit more.
And in order for them to do that on fast break, David, Chris Finch can – I mean, their defense is elite, right? They get stops. They hold you to one shot and go. So you don't have to change anything on the defensive side. We're already doing great at that. When we get a stop, however, it's a mindset change, right? Everybody, you start racing up the court, and they should be able to get some leak outs. And I mean, they got athletes on that team.
Gobert, when Rudy played with Utah, they ran fast. They played fast. Yeah. Kat doesn't like to run necessarily, him trail. Him trail as a
trail
shooter.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they're thinking about stuff like that. But the bottom line is they're not. They're bottom 10%, 15%, 20%. So I think those little things would help.
Denver Nuggets, defending champs. We talked about the starting five. Best in the league, Nikola Jokic is who he is. Best player in the world, Murray, Porter Jr. Porter Jr. is, by the way, having a really good season.
He was really good last night.
He was. Starting five is fine. I think you're worried about the bench.
I am. A couple of things. I was really impressed. I was more impressed with Denver last night than I have been all season because they played the Pacers. Now, Indiana did not have Tyrese Halliburton, but they had just won a road game without him before. Mm-hmm. They were 9-1 last 10 games. And it was a competitive game. If I'm Indiana, I'm thrilled. And if I can get Siakam, I'm really thrilled. Ooh. Can't get OG anymore because they need, to me, a paint scorer. By the way, they lead the league in paint scoring. They lead the league, but it's all with how they play. Right. They don't lead the league in half-court paint scoring. I'm sure of that. I have not looked
definitely
it up.
Not.
With Siakam, they could. So, but I was very happy with Indiana and very impressed with how Denver guarded. Jamal Murray was picking up full court. He was a problem. And I thought MPJ played great. I thought KCP was good. Jokic is an embarrassment as a human being. I'm embarrassed to be a human being because I'm nothing like him. He's so just good. The most – I mean, I think Joel Embiid is deserving of MP if this season ended today, but only because Jokic – he doesn't care. Jokic doesn't care. He's just – such a brilliant player. He made a touch lob pass yesterday from like 8 feet. I think it was to Aaron Gordon. It might have been MPJ. Where it looked like he was going to shoot it, but he just kind of lobbed it. He's amazing. He's just an amazing player. Jamal Murray looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, their starting five is right there with Boston. I it would be fun. I don't know how you could do it, but it'd be fun because you can't do it. But just a 5-on-5 tournament.
Oh yeah,
you know you can't do it because guys tweak an ankle. What are you going to do, kind of thing? But
right,
but those two teams would be—that'd be a 7-game series. I don't know. Oh, who I'd pick.
For sure. Yeah, that's
fucking amazing.
Because Tatum and Brown are a real problem, and amazing. The defense that Holiday and White can play. It's just But then still, the way Jokic moves those guys on offense, like it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the Los Angeles Clippers, David's team. You know, many people. Like, whatever. Clippers, we know about them. Load management team, blah, blah, blah. They stink, whatever. They're not going to be. Listen, Kawhi Leonard's playing, and he's playing like Kawhi Leonard. All NBA, all defense. Damn, those three are really good with Leonard, Harden, and PG-13. The Harden-Zubac combo is really excellent. They got depth and size on that team. David, if they stay healthy, I don't know. Clippers looking good.
I think they have a shot to win the West. A good shot. They have I looked at two issues. They're playing really good defense. Will that be maintained? What I'm fearful of is a drop off defensively for them because they're rolling. They got their top 4 seed and then we'll be fine in the playoffs, kick it back up a notch. Not so fast. I don't like that. I want you to earn that momentum. Now remember, Cleveland is one of those teams that for 4 years in a row pretty much it looked like they weren't able to play the kind of defense they needed to play under Ty Lue. And then the postseason every year, they blow my mind with how amazing they were. And I talked to David Griffin about it. David said that he was the GM then. Mm-hmm. He said that Ty Lue took over. Do we have David on the show here?
I don't know how we talked. Yeah, we did. Yeah, during COVID. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he might have told us then that Ty just took over and said, now I'm doing the defense. He wasn't doing it before. I thought that was ingenious. And so let's hope that they can keep playing defense all season. I think they're top 10, top 12 right now.
Yeah.
I like to see that. And then for a team that plays as slowly as they play, I think they're last in pace. They have too many turnovers. Mm. You wouldn't think that'd be the case, but it is because they play so slowly. That can be an issue. You're putting so much pressure on your offense and your defense, quite frankly, to be effective offensively, to be super efficient and productive enough when you're also turning the ball over a lot because it's going to convert more points for them.
Right.
That's an issue to keep track of.
And that'll be hard come the postseason, right? Because you're playing into really good defensive teams and, you know, you're losing possession. That's a problem. I had two wild card teams, David. Let's start with the Bucks first. They had a crazy win last night on a Dame logo three. They play poorest defense, which has been their bugaboo really all season. But what do you – look, they still have Giannis and Dame, and that's a hell of a 1-2 punch. And Middleton's been playing well this year. What are you watching for the Bucks second half of the season?
Yeah, to me, it's the defensive side of the court. They just – I watched that game last night, part of it. They just are not performing. I haven't looked up where their numbers are, but they're not performing
not good.
Well. Brook Lopez good. Isn't the same force that he was.
16th in defense.
Denver won it last year with about the same, but you'd like to see that more. Other than that, it's just build some depth. I'm not sure their bench is much of anything. That's an issue. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know what they would do. They're just so limited now what they can do. Mm-hmm. That's why OKC is such an advantage. There's so many options for them.
Yep.
It's really amazing. I like to see them tighten up things defensively so that they go into the postseason knowing they're not going to get rolled by anyone because of our defense.
Yeah, like Miami. The other team I threw in was the Pacers because their offense is so elite. Mind you, Halliburton's out right now with the hamstring. I'm assuming, again, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what hell's going to be, but I'm assuming he comes back and he's fine. Look, I just feel like if they can be halfway decent defensively, like they might scare some people with the way they play. What are you thinking about Indiana second half of the season?
Yeah, I've not looked at what their last 10 games are 9-2 after losing to Denver yesterday, what their defensive rating is. Maybe while I'm talking, you could look up on NBA.com because Dustin Thies doesn't give us that.
No, don't give us last 10. Calendar. Yeah, I'll pull that up.
But NBA.com does. I see a difference in what they're doing defensively for sure. They're taking a lot of pride in it. They've been playing good defense now for a bit. They're playing their better defensive players more. Aaron Nesmith did not play yesterday, so they were missing two starters with him and Halliburton. But he and Nembhard have made a difference to them defensively. Even if they don't make a trade for anybody, they've really improved. Rick Carlisle is creeping into the Coach of the Year conversation. Not so much creeping. They're doing good. I'd like to see, just solidify that. I'd like to see Miles Turner play with a little more urgency all the time. I don't see that a lot. But I do think they're going to pull some kind of trade because I think they realize we got some possibilities here and some young players that are valued.
Indiana 13th in defense in their last 10 games, 8-2, as you mentioned, which is, if they can play 13th ranked defense with that offense, look out.
Yeah. And they played some good games on the road.
They played some good games. We talked about this. As I said to you, with Halliburton out, is there anything they can learn about themselves defensively? You were like, maybe not. But they are playing better defensively. So when Tyrese comes back, hey, buddy,
big deal.
We're doing really well here defensively. Can you maybe not be a turnstile on this side of the floor?
Right. I would argue this. He should be empowered to feel like I don't have to be so great on offense. We did just fine in my absence. If that continues, they play Utah next after losing to Denver, winning their first game on the road. They have a couple more ones after that. I think it's a 6-game road trip, maybe. Tyrese, you don't got to do quite as much offensively. We need your energy on defense too. We can find other ways to score. We have plenty of scores. Mm-hmm. Now, after a trade, we'll see what happens. I have no idea.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's That's it. But I have three other teams.
Yeah. So I other ones, because I was like, those are the ones I see with the wild cards. But David, of course, big basketball brain. Who am I missing, and who you're like, keep an eye on these guys?
Well, I don't know about missing, but I think we probably should mention the Pelicans. They're playing very well.
They are very
well. And no one talks about them. And they win games sometimes when Zion doesn't play. We know what kind of force he can be. We got to keep watching them. Five seed, six seed?
Yeah, the Pelicans right now are five seed, and they're only a game and a half behind the Clippers. And they are, they are fifth in adjusted net rating, 13th on offense, 7th on defense. They're good.
They're good, yeah. Willie's right. Willie's done a great job, and this was a big year for him. And so, yeah, I think we should mention them.
Okay.
I have to, out of respect to the basketball guys, mention the Warriors.
Okay.
Draymond Green's back. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, I don't know what it means. I did read a great article about him today. I think it was on the Athletic. Really, really interesting stuff. He's an interesting guy. And a really special player who's had some issues, but can't take away his talent and what he's done on the court. This is realized talent, also not wasted talent. Mm-hmm. I don't expect much. I would tell you, I'm not sure unless they trade Kuminga, and what they're going to get for Kuminga. We'll see. I know they're trying. They're not trying to trade for Kuminga. They're trying to get some help.
Trying to get better.
Steph wants it. Steph's very frustrated. And then Miami.
Of course.
Miami is there. They're sitting right there still. We know not to count them out.
Never.
They've got good depth. Yesterday, Spoelstra only played 8 guys for whatever reason. But they've got good depth. I would not be surprised to see a deal there made. I don't think they want to depend on Jaime Jaquez in the postseason as a rookie. But he's not your typical rookie. He's a little older, which helps. But yeah, I think Jimmy Butler's not playing. Like, he never plays.
Well, it's so interesting you say that, because the Heat, you know, their whole culture, Heat culture, is the opposite of load management, right? They don't believe in that. Yet, I'm like, Jimmy Butler hardly plays all regular season. So whether you say you believe in it or not, somehow, however you do it, Jimmy always finds a way to be rested on the regular season. And then come postseason time, he turns into top 5 player in the world. So, you know, that's something to watch, because when they do that with Bam, with Spo's genius X's and O's, listen, Milwaukee don't want to see them on their side of the opposite them. The Celtics don't want to see them. They're just like, oh, not these guys. The 76ers definitely don't want to see them. And the Heat, they're like, we'll be 10th. We don't give a shit. We'll play whoever's in front of us. And it's like, all right, you know.
Well, Henry always says, he's quoting, I think, Dr. Marcus Elliott, that it's not so much that the players can't play these games as it is they're not training right, and haven't been training right. So in theory, if we did it all the right way, starting when they were younger, I think the argument is that we could probably handle 82. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but he's not wrong to suggest that they're not training right. But I think Miami does a really good job of that. Miami is, they're very team-centric or focused on preventing injuries and mm-hmm. building players up and training very hard to prepare for the season. They're expert at that. And in Jimmy's case, I have no idea why he's out. I don't think anyone really does. But but he's gonna be a hell of a player come postseason, I'm sure of that.
As he usually is. All right, David, it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is a big day in the NBA. Like Christmas for any of these players, it's an honor when they get to play on MLK Day. They have special jerseys. Of course, the league has done a good job of honoring the life and legacy of arguably the greatest human that this country has ever produced in Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in terms of all the things he's done for just human rights and the advancement of people in this country. And so, you know, the players like playing on this day, and they have really great stuff that they do and great videos. So I encourage fans to, if you like the other stuff around basketball, listen to this stuff, right? Because I'm sure, you know, Dr. King probably didn't predict an NBA where these guys were doing so well monetarily. Now, if he was still here, he'd be like, but you fellas can be doing a lot more than you're doing, right?
I'm really glad you said that, because it's the one thing I wish, I certainly can't do anything, but I wish someone could galvanize our celebrities, athletes, entertainers, and Taylor Swift is doing her part.
No doubt.
We need more people like that, I think, anyway. I'd love to see some of our athletes take a stand. We have some really terrible spots in America. Really terrible, terrible spots. Embarrassing. Embarrassingly so. And yet they love their sports heroes.
Sure do.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of that. Yeah. No,
absolutely. So is it like seven, maybe more than that, nine games tonight, I want to say, starting at like one this afternoon. So basketball all day.
I think I'm watching games starting at 2 or 2:30 today. Yeah.
A few that I'm keeping my eye on because they're teams that we mentioned today. Pelicans, Kings, I believe. Is that on the rundown? My rundown just disappeared, David.
I got it. So we got Pelicans, Mavs. Yeah, I'm watching that
okay.
game.
Okay. Because that's a potential playoff matchup, right? And you got Luka and Kyrie. By the way, you know, quietly, Kyrie is behaving and being a good soldier. And man, if those
we're two. We're not talking about him. It's like referees. You don't talk about them. They're doing good, right? Kyrie like a referee now.
If those two were cooking, listen, that's as tough an out as they're going to be in the position. We saw Luka do it with Luka and the Pips 2 years ago, David mentioned. They went to the conference
finals. They're trying. I just don't think they want to trade their young assets, Lively and Prosper, because they're talented players. But people are trying to get them. So we'll see what it does. But yeah, I'm watching that game. You've got Magic Knicks.
Because, look, the Magic struggling lately. I want to say 3-7 in the last 10. But still, in that top range.
Competitive. They've been competitive.
They can guard. Here's a team, David, that I'm wondering, do they say, look, it's not about going all in because they're not winning anything, but do they say, we need to get a little bit more help offensively and just
I don't think so. Orlando?
Okay. Yeah.
What I'm hearing is they don't want to do anything and change that timeline.
Okay.
It just puts I don't, whether right or wrong, it doesn't mean they won't. If someone's going to make an amazing offer, but my understanding from agents is Orlando doesn't want to play ball with anyone. They want to just see what they got this year. Franz Wagner is playing much better. He was really struggling. He's playing much better. Paolo is playing well. I think they're just going to see what they got this year and then maybe make a move in the offseason.
Well, they can guard for sure. That defense is legit. And that'll be a rock fight against the Knicks because they like to play some good defense too. So that'll be interesting. And then like Heat Nets just because it's the Heat. And Brooklyn is, again, they're in that play-in zone as well. They're an interesting team, David, because they've got a plethora of 3-and-D type wings and too many to really do anything. I was going to say, Mikal probably not, but although let me not say that. Anything's possible?
No, I think you're right. I think he probably won't get traded because there aren't enough picks yet. So you might as well keep your guys and try to at least be decent.
So Cam, DFS, those guys could be definitely on the move.
Right, especially Dorian Finney-Smith or Royce O'Neal.
I mean, Cam Johnson's very good too. He's another one.
He's good.
You can get a lot for him. I mean, I was joking the other day, David. You know who Phoenix could use right now? Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges.
Funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, is what it is. All right, folks, enjoy the games today. We will see you on Thursday. Take care.